The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the ESPN FC studios for today's edition of the show. Alongside Ale Moreno, I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. We've got Julian Laron and Jan Agafyortov waiting in the wings. We also have much to discuss. I don't know if you heard yesterday, Scotland are headed to a major tournament.
Really?
Yes, for the first time since Craig Burley played. We will hear from Craig and Derek Ray as they continue the Scottish celebrations. But we actually start the show with much more serious news. Liverpool superstar Mo Salah has tested positive for COVID-19 while on international duty with the Egyptian national team. Here we see a list of some of the games that he could miss. Obviously, the World Cup qualifiers, a great concern for Egypt. As for Liverpool, massive game November 22nd against Leicester City in the Premier League, and then 3 days after that, midweek against Atalanta. Ale, this has been a bad international break for Liverpool, and it only seems to be getting worse.
It does, but what are you going to do? And I think this is where the criticism of people just kind of getting all worked up and saying, why are we having international breaks? Why are we playing with our national teams? What's going on? Well, okay. If you're going to make that argument because of your concerns of COVID-19 and what the repercussions could be, in this case for Mohamed Salah, last month it was Cristiano Ronaldo, so on and so forth, well, you can also make the argument and say, why are we playing Champions League? Mm. Does that not involve international travel? Does that not involve Barcelona going to Ferencváros in Hungary and Ferencváros going to Barcelona and so on and so forth? And you can continue to go down that path. So my point essentially is, if indeed we are truly concerned about COVID-19, and it's not just because we want to pick on international soccer, if we just want to talk about the health and the safety protocols of the players, then where do we stop? Mm. Why do we play Champions League? Why do we play Copa Libertadores? Why do we play Copa Sudamericana and Europa League? All right? Where do we draw the line? And that, to me, is essentially saying, look, people care more about their domestic leagues. In this case, Liverpool fans care about Mohamed Salah. Juventus fans care about Cristiano Ronaldo. And they couldn't care less about what's going on in international soccer. And to that point, I will say to you, well, it's hypocrisy. Mm. Because if we are concerned about health, then let's not stop with international soccer. Let's go down the line and say, okay, this is not good either. That's international travel. That's travel over there. That's putting the players in peril over there, too, and at risk over there, too. So, to me, it's just a whole lot of nonsense. Either we play and we know that this is a risk, or we don't play and everybody stays home. And now, is that the solution? Is that where we want to go to? You know there are risks involved in this, whether you play Champions League, whether you play with an international team, whether you travel or not travel. The situation is not under control anywhere, because if it was under control, everything would be open and everybody would be at the stadiums.
Yeah. Fair point. Look, a lot of people are upset about this. Jules, one of the first people that popped into my mind, other than Salah, obviously his family, is Jurgen Klopp. I mean, Klopp has been adamant. He's been screaming. Mm. He screamed at a reporter in a pre-match interview about the fixture list. And then just before this, he's complained about international football, Jules. And the point that he's making is that the clubs feel like they're completely alone. He's going to be fuming, isn't he?
Yeah, he would be fuming, although Ali makes a great point about, you know, players travel as well with their club and can also be positive with COVID-19. We saw it many times as well outside of the international break and the national team bubble. So I don't think the two should be linked. However, where Klopp had a very, very solid point was that why in a very congested season with so many fixtures at club level and domestically and in Europe, why do we play so much international football, international breaks? And of course, federations and FIFA and UEFA have other points to put forward. But you're right, you know, you do wonder why the Nations League, for example, hasn't been shortened. For example, less games played. Why do we still have those friendlies like we had on Wednesday night, adding another game into those international breaks? There's millions of questions that are left with no answers right now, which is a real shame. And certainly, the wider picture is that it is to the detriment of players, whether it's COVID-19, injury, short injuries like the one Alexander-Arnold staying with Liverpool suffered against Man City, longer injuries like the Virgil van Dijk one or the Joe Gomez one at Liverpool as well, is to the detriment of players.
Jan, you played for Norway. You represented your country in a World Cup. I know you have a lot of love for international football. Right now, though, is international football worth it?
Yeah, I think it's worth it, but I think there are some unnecessary games that shouldn't be done. We should do the qualification. As for Norway, we had to play Israel on Wednesday. That game was taken away, and rightly so, because that was about the third place in the Nation League. That didn't have to happen, and it didn't happen. And I like that. But I think that we should, as football lovers, we should mind us not talking about COVID-19 as a football problem. COVID-19 is a society problem. And if you get players to travel, if you get them to travel to Egypt or to Norway or Israel or France, whatever, there is a risk. And I agree, we have to decide what we're going to do. I mean, that could happen if you travel from Manchester to Shrewsbury in England for a League Cup game. That could happen. And I think that we have to put it in the right perspective here. Should we say that football should stop during the COVID-19? I think it's very important that in these dark times, because it's dark and people have not a lot to look forward to. We can't go to a football game, or we can't see our grandmothers, grandfathers. I think in a time like this, football is very important. And I've been staying home now. I'm not traveling for Champions League, although I went to Rome and Amsterdam, coming back, having a quarantine in Norway. And I must say that I'm also very proud how football has treated COVID-19. I saw Lazio Dortmund, fantastic arrangement, and I felt very, very safe, as I did Ajax against Liverpool. So on the other hand, yes, we got some positive tests for some players. On the other hand, I think football also as a business have done this very, very good.
Jules, the contemporaries, the players that you talk to on the record, off the record, are you hearing from people who have maybe a similar mindset to what we heard from Toni Kroos, who feels like he's being used as a puppet by UEFA and FIFA? Or do you hear from players kind of what we're hearing from the guys on this panel, the defense, and what we heard from Shaq on yesterday's show, the defense of the value of international football?
Yes, and I spoke to Andy Robertson straight after the Man City-Liverpool game. And obviously for Scotland, it was a very different international break because there was so much at stake with the game against Serbia. But he said, we all want to play for our country. Of course you do. Jan wanted, Ali wanted to go. They would have gone. We saw Sergej Milinkovic-Savic, who was not really supposed to leave Rome and Italy to travel to go with Serbia to play that Scotland game. But he said, I have to go. This is the biggest game of the season for me and for my country. So I think players all over the world, it's their dream to play for their country, for the national team. They all want to do it. However, there's certainly a feeling right now, more and more amongst them, that they've played so many games already. Some have been lucky not to get injured. Others have already been injured. There's the feeling that it's a lot already, that they are tired, that they can feel their body is really stretched, is borderline to injuries. For the one who haven't been injured, who've been lucky not to be injured so far. So there's a bit of both. But of course, they want to play for their country. This is something amazing in a career, especially the games that we saw for Scotland yesterday, for example. But I think there's also a big feeling of like it starts to get too much already.
Jules, do you think there's any chance that come the spring, if we're in the same place that we are now, we see UEFA and FIFA maybe give these guys a break on the international breaks?
But no, because they, certainly for the ones who have qualified for Euro 2020 in 2021, they will have to prepare that competition. So you will need that time to work with your national team squads, have friendlies or work on the training ground. You know, you don't have your players for many days when you're a national team head coach. So in a way, I would understand why Deschamps and others, for example, would say to UEFA, hang on, I need my boys now. We're preparing for the Euro. This is a huge competition for us. We need that time. So it's a very, very tricky situation because everybody has different interests. And I just don't think it can be solved now. Gareth Southgate the other day was saying, we need to sit down on the table. It's too late now. The season has been arranged already. We've got all the fixtures, all the list, all the scheduling has been done already. And that's the way it has to be, unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know, until the end of the season.
But boys,
go ahead, yeah.
Okay. No, I was just saying, as we've seen the Liverpool injury woes, and you can understand Jürgen Klopp when you see this list, of course, but this is not only with international games, but I think that what we need to have a look at is how many games these players are playing, are traveling, and so on and so on. But I 100% agree with Jules. We can't talk about that now. Then the clubs have to get involved when the plan for the season is done. This is also a power battle between the Premier League, between UEFA, between FIFA, and so on and so on, and the other international football federations. And it's time now for sports, it's time for football clubs to get their people into decision-making positions. We always end up saying, well, there's something wrong with the guys with the blazer. They have no clue about football. Well, get involved then. Don't only complain about what is happening when we come to November and one of your players is injured. Then you have to be there when the decisions are made. Football is run with a lot of idiots in the big places, in the big federations. But they are there because the clubs don't want to get involved. Where are the former players that are getting involved? The former players do like me. They're sitting in a studio somewhere and say we should do this and that. Then we have to be involved in sports politics. That's where we have to start.
Wait, is Jan politicking for a position here? Is this what's happening? Is this what's going on?
No. I was working for the anti-doping organization, WADA, against anti-doping. And I see how many former athletes are there. And the former athletes like out there, like Edwin Moses or Becky Scott of Canada, who did a fantastic job, they have been told not to speak. We need to get the athletes into the decision-making. Then they wouldn't have to play so many games because people who do it now, they are elected or chosen to do that. We can't go on like this. We can't only complain. What does that help us?
Very quickly about scheduling and the concerns of scheduling and why we have to play these games. I'll give you an example of CONMEBOL, where they have to play 18 matches, so they have to find 18 dates. Okay, World Cup's in 2022. Now we're within 2 years of that, and up until this point, you've only played two matches. Okay, where do you find the time? And so whenever you do have this international breaks, you have to be able to then make sure that you take advantage of these opportunities and make sure that you squeeze these games in. If you're CONMEBOL, you're already behind. You're a year behind of what you usually do. You start your qualifiers usually, as per my experience, 3 years ahead of the World Cup. Now you are 2 years down the road and you still haven't really started. And so the truth of the matter is you're already behind. You're playing catch up, as is everybody else in the world. So, hey, guess what? Stop the complaining. It is going to be difficult. You're going to have to play a lot of games. And to be honest with you, some of the club coaches and some of the national team coaches, instead of whining about each other, they have to start working together.
A debate that could surely continue on into extra time. Ale is back. So is Jan. So is Jules. We're taking your questions on Twitter. Hopefully we laughed as much as we do on yesterday's show. Look at that crew. Happy as ever.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Marshall of Scotland, the hero, as Scotland qualifies for a major tournament for the first time since 1998, celebrating in fashion with a famous conga line. Feels like half our team here at ESPN FC has a Scottish tie-in. For more, we welcome in a couple guys that didn't make it for the celebration on yesterday's show, Derek Ray and Craig Burley. I know what everybody's asking, just how big a deal is this? This is how big a deal it is. Craig Burley has not tweeted since July 13th, but Craig was on Twitter first thing this morning sending out congratulations. Craig, I know, even you loved it.
I broke my hiatus on Twitter just for that moment. That's how big it was for Scotland. And I also broke another code of mine, and I text my former teammate, Stevie Clark, the manager of Scotland, because sent him a message this morning, and he got back to me eventually when he worked out it wasn't going to cost him too much to text to America. And he just says, thanks, because it was, you know, I just felt this morning it was such an achievement for him. I mean, so many really good managers before him have just fallen on the sword in this job because of failure to qualify. And when he woke up this morning, he realised that he's the first manager since Craig Brown in 1998 to take this nation to a major championships. And no matter what happens when Scotland get there next summer, that itself is an achievement, bearing in mind where the country has been for the last two decades or so.
Derek, from the play-by-play perspective, I don't know if you've seen it. It's gone viral. Our colleague Mark Donaldson calling the match, going absolutely crazy. Of course, Scottish is Mark. I imagine you were doing the same, just didn't have a mic in front of you.
I was on that conga line, at least in my mind, and I think every Scot was. And, you know, Craig makes a really good point about what a big achievement this is. Scotland is a football daft country. You only have to go there to realise that. And we have endured 22 years of heartache. When Craig and his teammates were at France 98, nobody could have imagined that it would be 22 years until Scotland was at a major international tournament again. And of course, we're in a pandemic year, so people are naturally a bit down. What a lift this is. I have taken great pleasure just looking at the celebrations from around Scotland, from people's homes, over the course of the last 24 hours. And, you know, this will stay with everybody in Scotland for a long time. And credit to Steve Clarke, because just think about where Scotland were 18 months or so ago. I was back home when they suffered that humiliation, and it was a humiliation against Kazakhstan. And nobody saw a way out of it, but with a bit of organization, and now 9 matches without defeat, and players who clearly, by the way, want to be there, and we haven't been able to say that about some of the Scotland players of the recent past, but these guys really wanted to be there, and they deserved the win. We saw that, I thought, from kickoff in Belgrade last night.
Craig, yeah, that's really it. Like, there was so much pessimism, especially from Stevie Nicol on this show about Scotland's chances. They very much deserve this, and especially considering it was a road game, something that, where they have really struggled in the past.
Yeah, well, they had been on a good run of form, but when you looked at the teams that they had played, the narrative was a little false, because when they'd played two of the better sides, certainly one very good side in Belgium, they lost 4-0 to Belgium and Russia. Then they hit a run of games with Alexis Tsipras and Israel and the Czech Republic twice and San Marino. So they were getting results, and it was kind of a little bit of a false narrative. But so Serbia were clearly better than those sides. I think 15 places ranked higher in FIFA. Plus, as you mentioned, the game was in Belgrade. So that was an uphill task straight away. But I was shocked the way Serbia approached this game. They approached it like it was a friendly, and that just gave Scotland the confidence to build slowly into the match and keep their shape. I would imagine Steve Clarke, before they went out for that kickoff, said, listen, the first 15 minutes here are going to be a barrage from Serbia, so expect it. But it didn't come. And also, from that part of the world in the Balkans, and I've played in Zagreb, and I've played in Sarajevo, the neighbouring countries, the atmosphere when you go there to play soccer is hostile as hell, right? There would have been 50,000, you know, Serbians with the flares and all sorts, but it wasn't there. It wasn't there to frighten the Scotland players. It wasn't there to push the Serbian players on. And so they got the result. But the one thing I would say, and I don't know if Derek's ever seen anything like this, I've never seen that standard of penalty kicks in a game of that magnitude. Because trust me, when you walk up to take a penalty kick, you're thinking, if I miss this, if I balloon this over the bar, if the goalkeeper goes the right way, I could be the player that denies my country getting to the first major championships in 22 years. And here we had 5 guys, a couple of them off the bench, who stood up and I thought took the most magnificent penalties. Bearing in mind, the Serbian goalkeeper went the right way almost every time. So that put an added pressure on, and I just felt the penalty kicks that these boys took under that pressure. And in all fairness, 4 of the Serbian penalties were also excellent. It was only the Mitrovic one that was poor, and David Marshall made a save. But to stand up and do that under the pressure of taking your country to a major championships and place them in the corner like that, I thought it was amazing.
Derek, to that point, sometimes when you talk about modern day players, you wonder if like the history matters to them. Does it weigh on them? After all, for a lot of these players, that 20 years isn't their career. It's not their necessarily responsibility. But you could tell, like, not just from the conga line, from all the reactions, the emotional post-match interviews, that history was weighing on this specific group of guys.
Well, the problem is that they are reminded of it wherever they go. And, you know, we do that as journalists, as broadcasters. So there is this weight of history. And, you know, to be honest, when Scotland were in the situation of knowing that it was going to come down to, well, Israel, first of all, and then either Serbia or Norway, there's no Scot who honestly could have said, yeah, I think, you know, we'll beat maybe Israel, but, you know, Serbia or Norway? Probably not. You know, Erling Haaland on one side, Serbia with players like Filip Kostic and Milinkovic Savic and Dusan Tadic. I mean, a high technical level, but as Craig said, they didn't show it. I do think, though, that with this particular group of players, and I've had the pleasure of meeting a few of them away from the pitch, I think that they are confident in their own ability. If you're Andrew Robertson, you should be confident. If you're Kieran Tierney, you should be confident. You're playing at a high level of football. And I think with that confidence comes a moving away from this feeling that, you know, we're not good enough. You know, Scotland demonstrated that they were good enough, and they did it with their style of football. And Craig is spot on the penalties. I mean, I thought it was an almost Germanic level of efficiency in terms of penalty taking, and that, of course, is the highest praise you can bestow upon anybody when it comes to penalty shootouts. But everyone was perfect. Steve Clarke did a very sensible thing in bringing on Lee Griffiths ostensibly for that penalty shootout, and he steps up. And one thing we know about Lee Griffiths is he takes a really good penalty, and that was one, and they all did. And then David Marshall, who of course did it before in the previous game, was there when they needed him. And you know, it was sort of the ultimate Scottish roller coaster, because we do like a bit of drama. We don't make it easy on ourselves, conceding in the manner that we did. But then to be able to do it that way is something we'll never forget.
All's well.
Sebi, go ahead. I know you're just putting the group up there, and that whets the appetite straight away, because we were lucky in 98. We went into the World Cup and we faced Brazil. And people might say, well, why is that lucky? Well, if you go to a major championship, I think you want to play in the showcase games, because you know you're not going to win it. They're not good enough to win it, clearly. So you want to play in the showcase games. England is a showcase game. They'll be talking about that for months, because that's one of the oldest rivalries in world football. And then you look at Croatia, who are in the World Cup final. They've certainly regressed since that moment. And the Czech Republic, Scotland have beaten twice recently, albeit one of them was a COVID-stricken Czech side. But one of the things I wanted to point out was I saw a couple of two or three Scottish journalists about 4 or 5 months ago having an inverted comma debate about if Steve Clarke wants to play a back four, then Robertson or Tierney is going to have to miss out. One of them might have to stay on the bench. And I'm like, no. When you have two players of this quality, you got to find a way to shoehorn them into the team. You got to find a system. And that's what Stevie Clarke did. And in all fairness to Kieran Tierney, he's probably the more flexible out of the two, because he can play wing-back, he can play full-back, he can play left-side centre-back in a three, he can play left-side centre-back in a four. So he's given Stevie Clarke that flexibility. And the other side of the coin, as I was on doing some stuff in the BBC with Colin Hendry, who was the last man to captain Scotland at a major tournament in 98, and he knows he's going to lose that because somebody's going to captain the team. I'm probably going to lose my last man to score at a major championships because they're probably going to score a goal. But if one of the Scotland lads wants to help me out and get themselves sent off, then I won't be the last man to be sent off at a major championships. Please, somebody just help me out here.
Here you go. Red card, but not one that compromises their position in the group against Scotland, going into Group D, where they'll face off against England, Croatia, and the Czech Republic. That England match, June 18th at Wembley. Should be a tasty fixture. Mark your calendars.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
UEFA Nations League back in action on Saturday. 9 games total, but 3 in particular we're keeping an eye on. Germany, Ukraine, Switzerland, Spain, and Portugal, France. Actually, Portugal, France, where we'll start. That one Saturday in Lisbon, and critical when it comes to the Group 3 standings. Portugal and France even on points, but there, as you can see, Portugal with a better goal differential. So they've got a little bit of an edge in the group. For more, we welcome in Frank Leboeuf, Stuart Robson, Julian Laurent still with us as well. Frank, I'll start with you. Given the loss against Finland, what's your level of confidence, of optimism, heading into this match for France?
I have to be optimistic because I still believe that France is a fantastic team, and among all the players that we have real leaders. We're gonna, I'm sure, gonna do the job to make sure they're gonna react. Comparing to the game that we saw against Finland, we have to know that it will be a different team with different players, and I'm sure they're going to be motivated as never been, because it will be a fantastic game to play against Portugal, and it's not a friendly game. So I want to believe that it's possible to see a much better French team.
Jules, as Frank mentions, we expect a lot of changes for Didier Deschamps. We had you get some homework, pick out what you think will be the 11. What are the kind of biggest question marks? Where are the big decisions for Deschamps as he tries to put this team together?
I mean, right now it's only about fitness of two players, really. Presnel Kimpembe at the back and Kylian Mbappe up front. We saw Kylian Mbappe not training with the team tonight in the training behind closed doors. He will have a little test tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, so the morning of the game. And only after that, he and Deschamps will take the decision whether he starts the game or not. Obviously, it's a huge game. Probably because the winner will then qualify for the semi-final of the Nations League, and he wants to play that game, but you can't take any risk either, because there's bigger games to come after that, both for the national team and for his club PSG as well. So Kimpembe, I think, will be fit and will start at the back. For Mbappe, we still have to wait a bit longer. For the rest, it's pretty much the first team, all the players for that first team, strongest team back compared to the B team or the C team that we saw against Finland.
Frank, can't ignore that Jules put Paul Pogba in that starting 11. Should a player who is not a guaranteed starter for what, the 14th best team in the Premier League, be a guaranteed starter for the defending World Cup champions?
Well, according to Deschamps' comment today about the decision of which player is going to play, he said that Pogba will have to react on Saturday. So, meaning that he's going to play. It's a real surprise for me, because I don't know if it's a good idea, if it will serve Pogba in the right way after that bad game that he had. Hopefully it's going to work, but I'm very concerned, you know. And you have, of course, more players capable of doing a better job than Pogba, but I know Deschamps considers him as one of his favorites and also one of the leader of the group. Thinking that he can be the player that he wants to that he want him to be, and he's going to react properly to help the national team.
Robbo, a real tasty matchup. What kind of game do you think we get?
Oh, I think it's going to be a very good game. And remember, Portugal have got some very good attacking players. When you think that João Felix could lead the line, Ronaldo coming off the left-hand side, you've got Bruno Fernandes playing in the hole behind, Bernardo Silva playing on the right-hand side. That's a great front four. And they've got two very good holding midfield players as well in Pereira and Carvalho. So there's a lot of good players there. And Jota, likewise, can come into that side. And Cancelo's probably playing the best football I've seen him play at Man City so far down the right-hand side. And they've got a fullback in Guerrero who loves to get forward. That's a good team that Portugal have got. And I think it'll be maybe too good for France at the moment.
Frank, what do you think? Do you see France as the favourites given that lineup that we just saw?
No, for me, France is not the favorite. We have to be fair to the Portuguese team. Absolutely fantastic players, as Robo just mentioned. And in terms of confidence, you know, having won against a very bad team, Andorra, with all due respect, and with the French bad results, I really think that in their head, and maybe in their football, Portugal are above. Now they will have to show it, and France is always reacting well when they are in difficulties, so we'll see.
Jules, I'd be remiss if we talk about Portugal, didn't mention Cristiano Ronaldo closing in on the international goals record. Good chance that he at least makes some progress towards that over the weekend.
What do you mean, good chance? You know, he's never scored against France in five games.
Oh, so he's I'm due. Really he's due then.
Varane, Kimpembe, Lloris, keep him quiet. Another game, six in a row, and he doesn't score against us. But you're right. I mean, he's closing on Ali Dai's record. He's only seven behind to equal it. And whether he's on Saturday against France or later on, this international break in the following game against Croatia, or, you know, when we come back in 2021, he will beat that record, no doubt. He'll probably go find the records of the most caps as well, that Sergio Ramos has leveled with Gigi Buffon on Wednesday too. So it's not that he will get there. I'm just hoping that he has a quiet night on Saturday and he comes back on his goal-scoring record in the following game.
Portugal-France in Group 3. Meanwhile, in Group 4, some interesting matchups as well. Switzerland-Spain, Germany-Ukraine. Let's start with Switzerland and Spain. Robbo, this is a match that you're calling. You think it'll be a good one?
I think it will be good. I'm interested to see Spain at the moment because I've covered all their games so far. And they're a developing side, but they're a developing side with still Ramos as the main player. Navas at right back is still playing really well. But it's interesting to see whether Adama Traore plays, because in the last game against Ukraine in the Nations League, he was the outstanding player. And it showed a different side to the way Spain wanted to play. He must have gone past the fullback Sobol about 14, 15 times, got crosses into the box. But there was nobody in the box ready to throw themselves onto to balls coming in the box and winning headers. And that's why I hope that Alvaro Morata might get a chance with Adama Traore playing on that right-hand side. But they're still a good side, Spain. But they're just, at the moment, still developing their style of play. They're still developing how they get into front areas. And it's still developing how they play in that final third. But it'll be a good game against what I would say is a fairly average Switzerland side.
Jules, that's just it. When we talk about Spain, it's like great, 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 but they don't have a number nine. And do they yet have that answer?
Well, certainly it looks like Morata and the way he played against the Netherlands, for example, on Wednesday night, albeit in a friendly, but especially for the first hour, he was fantastic. He gave the goal to Sergio Canales by dropping a bit deeper. The way he turned was great. The ball through was perfect. The weight on the ball was perfect as well. And I think he can offer them that too, which is so hard to defend on if you're a centre-back. He can also, as we saw with Juventus, being very clinical in the box now. And if he gets good service, and if you count the goals that were disallowed for tiny offside after VAR intervention, he will be on even more goals scored this season. So he's certainly going through a very good period in his own career. The confidence is high, and again, for me, if Luis Enrique finds the right pieces in that jigsaw, who you play on the right, whether that's Adama Traore or Gerard Moreno or someone else, who do you play on the left-hand side? Is Marco Asensio good enough to be regularly in that team? Do you play Oyarzabal, for example? There's a lot of choices, a lot of options. Who are the three in midfield? Do you play Rodri? Do you play Busquets? Do you play Canales? Again, so many options for Luis Enrique. If he finds the right one, I think that Morata could really be the number nine that they really need to achieve great things.
Frank, elsewhere in that group, Germany, Ukraine. Look, if we look back at Germany in the last Nations League, at the last World Cup, they're starting to make a habit of finishing in the bottom half of their groups. I know people poo-poo the Nations League, say it's like not that important, but at home against Ukraine, like if things don't go well, Joachim Löw, there can be some pressure, some trouble.
Yes, it will have, and I think they will have to win. I think they're going to take it seriously. I mean, I've seen the game that they played, the friendly game that they played against the Czech Republic, and it was like a B even maybe a C team where I barely knew the players will play, where we were playing on Tuesday or Wednesday. So I'm sure the Joachim Löw rested some players to make sure they're going to be fit for that game, important game against Ukraine. We saw France playing against Ukraine. It was a disaster for Ukraine. They've been hammered at the Stade de France. So it can be a good chance for Germany to get on with their confidence and get the right results.
Jules, real quick on Germany. I'm not overstating it, right? The German public is starting to turn on Löw.
They don't even watch the games anymore. The TV ratings are so poor because it's just, one, it's not very interesting. They're not playing well, as we saw against the Czech Republic on Wednesday night. They struggle so far in this Nations League as well. They keep drawing. They keep conceding late goals as well, to show that they can't keep their focus for 93, 95 minutes in every game. And I think Jogi Löw is under so much pressure before that game. Ukraine, don't forget, beat Spain, albeit in Ukraine last month. So it's not going to be an easy game for them.
Guys, great stuff. Plenty more on tomorrow's show. We will be covering all the action from around Europe on ESPN FC. Don't miss it. Ale, MLS playoffs just around the corner.
Hey, hey.
Not a very exclusive party this time around. 18 of the 26 teams in the league have qualified. Nashville and Inter Miami among them. They'll play November 20th. That's next Friday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time start on ESPN2, ESPN Deportes. Speaking of Major League Soccer, the academy system anyway at NYCFC, where Gio Reyna got his start, then went to Dortmund. Turns out it worked out pretty well for him, that move. Yeah, on Friday, Reyna's 18th birthday. He gets a new contract. Reportedly, will keep him at the club through the year 2024. We've got Jan, Ale, and Jules with us. Jules, I'll start with you here. It's an obvious sign, this extended contract, that Dortmund likes what Reyna is doing. Is it a sign, though, that there might be interest from elsewhere as well?
Yeah, I think it's both, of course. All the big clubs would have watched the development of Giovanni Reyna with a lot of attention and clearly a lot of interest as well, because you don't see many 17-year-olds who could come to a league like the Bundesliga, a club like Dortmund, a competition like the Champions League, for example, and do what he did and what he's doing. So, of course, it's as much as rewarding him for the performances that he's had already, and he's, I think, when we're above expectations, so much talent, so much elegance, but also it's a message sent to other clubs saying, hang on, for now he's ours, he's only 18, he can stay here for a bit longer, and then you all, Bayern and PSG and Man City and Real Madrid or whoever, can come and fight for him, because with a contract, with a long-term contract like this, 2024, that surely means that he will stay in Dortmund for at least another 2 or 3 years minimum.
Jan, Reyna has said that Dortmund is not a stepping stone, but we had Jurgen Klinsmann on one of the shows recently, and he said at one point he just had to leave Spurs because he wanted to win trophies. Can Reyna, if the next step is to win trophies, do it at Dortmund?
I think that Dortmund hope they will, and I think that the only thing they could do is to try to get their young, promising players and getting on long contracts. I think that's great work of Dortmund to get Reyna in there. Not only is he a good player, he's also a good symbol of the club, being American, being a very good guy in all interviews. He's a perfect signing for any club. But they got to keep now Haaland for some years. They got him Bellingham for some years. They managed to keep Sancho. But as Klinsmann said, and it was the same thing at Arsenal, at one stage the young talents had to move on because they had to win titles. Having said that, I think that what Dortmund has managed to do now is to keep these young players, because they are promising playing time. I was doing Lazio Rome against Dortmund. I interviewed Sebastian Kehl, who is like the head of sport there, or the manager in the dressing room, so to say. And he said, I asked him why he's playing Bellingham today, and he said because we promised him to play in the Champions League. So I think that with that kind of attitude, you will get Erling Haaland, you will get Reyna to extend their contracts, and then they just have to hope that in that time they're having these players, they can win a title. And for Reyna, oh man, he's 18. Even when he's doing all 4 years, he's 22 and he's still a young player. So I think this is a match in heaven. Well done, Dortmund, and happy birthday to Gio Reyna.
Ale, it feels like we've been watching him light up the Bundesliga for a while. We haven't seen him with the U.S. senior team until yesterday. Curious two things. what you thought of the performance, but more what you thought of the role, because it looked like he could go wherever he wanted, whenever he wanted.
And I love that role for him. Now, that role is only going to last up until Christian Pulisic comes back into the picture, because Pulisic may be the guy who actually gets that role in Reyna's place of a Pulisic. Now, in terms of what Gio Reyna has done or did against Wales, I'll tell you what I did like about it. He grabbed the ball. There was confidence. Almost trying to do too much, but there was confidence. There was a certain presence about him. There was, okay, look, man, I'm going to show for the ball. I'm going to get in a good space. I'm going to find the next pass. I'm going to take somebody on. I'm going to look for a pass forward. It wasn't the sort of performance in which you say, goodness, he was nervous. Goodness, he doesn't belong. None of that. The fact that Greg Berhalter decides to say, you know, Gio, just float around. Find the ball. Find the spaces. It tells you that Berhalter is seeing the same things that we're seeing. This kid has all sorts of talent. As for Borussia Dortmund, what they're doing is protecting their assets. Mm. They're saying, you know what? There's going to be a lot of interest for this kid. We better make sure we get our hands on him quickly, and therefore we have a project for him for the next three or four years. After that, yes, there's going to be a springboard, because if the progression continues and the maturation continues, both with club and country, Gio Reyna, the world is right there for him to take over.
You think he'll see the end of that contract at Dortmund 2024? You think that's too soon for that jump?
I think Gio Reyna right now is at an interesting point where he's on the verge, on the verge of taking that next big leap, on the verge of really becoming a superstar. Erling Haaland, superstar. Gio Reyna, not quite there. Not quite to that point. And while Haaland and Reyna have a great relationship, one of the things that could help Gio Reyna is the fact that he tagged along with Erling Haaland, and that that relationship elevates both of them. And if that's the case and he takes that jump, it's hard to see both Haaland and Reyna staying with Dortmund for a long period of time.
Jan, last word on this to you. How long do you think Reyna lasts at Dortmund?
I think he will stay there for a while, and maybe then he extends his contract again with even better money. But what I like about these two players, talking about Haaland and Reyna, they're good teams around them who tell their sons, their players, their clients, so to say, just develop into great football players, and the rest, well, the rest is consequences.
Thank you very much, guys. Of course, Bundesliga back on ESPN Plus next weekend. You can see all the schedule there. It includes Gio Reyna and Dortmund. They'll play against Hertha Berlin next Saturday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, to kick off for that one.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Couple key qualifiers in South America on Thursday. Ecuador beat Bolivia 3-2, but the one everybody's talking about, Argentina Paraguay, finished 1-1 in Buenos Aires. Messi had a goal disallowed thanks to VAR as Argentina drops their first points of the qualifying campaign. Let's talk Messi, because that's what we do when we talk Argentina or Barcelona. Look, the thought all this year has been, oh, he's unhappy Barcelona. When he goes to Argentina, it's going to be great. Is that what you saw last night in his performance?
No. It was a tired performance from Lionel Messi, particularly in the second half. There were a couple of sequences in which he gets fouled and he's about to take the free kick. And you see Lionel Messi bent over and just kind of gasping for air. And I'm thinking, man, he looks winded. Then I'm thinking, well, maybe it's just a long run, maybe it's a long possession. He gets fouled, he's just catching his wind. He gets fouled again, and again, he's about to take a free kick. And you see Lionel Messi essentially taking a knee while he is putting the ball down for a free kick. And I'm thinking, this guy's just tired. He's winded. And he's struggling to find players to combine with at Argentina. Argentina is a team that right now just plays the ball sideways and back. And sideways and back. And sideways and back and sideways and back. And then it becomes very easy and very predictable to defend. And Paraguay did a good job of really forcing Argentina into uncomfortable positions.
All that said, he should have had a goal. Do you think they were right to disallow it?
It was a foul on Angel Romero. It was a foul. But the moment that the foul happened till the moment the goal happens, it's 30 seconds that have transpired. And 8 passes by Argentina. Some of those passes were sideways and back. And eventually there's a combination. And eventually Messi scores. It just didn't feel like it was the same sequence of play.
Imagine that, us discussing VAR. Plenty more over on the ESPN FC YouTube channel. We're talking all sorts of stuff. Great bonus material, lots of content. Make sure to subscribe. All right, we're pretty much out of time, but do you have any, like, Scottish roots or anything? No. Want to talk about Scotland?
Nope. No. Enough talk about Scotland. Venezuela, baby.
Ooh, against Brazil?
That's right.
Wow, confident?
Nope. That's all right. Vamos, Venezuela!
On that note, we'll see you next time. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into ESPN FC's Extra Time. We are going 4 wide. Wow, what a moment in the big studio with Julian Laurent, Jan Agafjordtoff, and Ale Moreno. Guys, we've got plenty of good questions from our friends on Twitter.
Am I supposed to look at you? Am I supposed to look over here? Who am I? Because it feels weird.
For your own benefit, I would just look at the screen because you don't need to look straight at me. Frank McManaman, one of our many frequent Twitter followers here, always sends in good questions. Oh, Ale, we were just talking about. Why are we hyping up the U.S. national team so much? Shouldn't we be embarrassed that they could only manage one shot on target against a full team of championship-level players? And lower, I'll add, Gareth Bale was watching the Masters from the expensive seats up there in the suites. There has been a lot of hyperbole about
this. Yes, but there's reason for optimism. It's not...
What, the negative past?
Well, yeah, if you have a very low bar to begin with, and then you start looking at where your main players, where they are on a daily basis, where they're playing on a weekly basis, the sort of competition that they're getting within their own club teams and who they're playing against, then you start saying, wait a minute, that's pretty nice.
All right, but then should that team dominate Wales?
Wait, are you going to answer the question or am I going to answer the question? Because if you're going to answer the question, then just go ahead and ask yourself and we'll be fine. We just go home. I don't know why you bring me when you want to answer. Goodness. Okay, so where was I? There is reason for optimism here. There is. Serginho Dest is playing at Barcelona. That's something that has never happened before in the history of U.S. soccer. And so that is something to hang on to. Weston McKennie playing at Juventus. That's something to be hopeful about. Christian Pulisic, Gio Reyna, and the list goes on and on and on. The other thing that you can say about this game against Wales is that for this particular match, they had a big number of one training session, one significant training session, right? And so, and Greg Berhalter is trying to get players in and trying to see players and trying to see Moussa and trying to see that guy, What do they bring? How do they behave within the training camp? How are they in training? How are they in, even at the meal room? What kind of relationships are they building with other players? All of that is going on. And then you're then supposed to look what? Like, you're supposed to look like world beaters when you go and play Wales?
I mean, Wales beaters.
Okay. Let me just ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Why are you so negative?
I totally understand the optimism around the team.
Okay.
All the points you make, totally valid. But the performance yesterday was not this ushering in of a new era. They got one shot on goal against a Wales BC team.
But nobody said they were going to win the World Cup tomorrow, Seth.
I just want some goals, shots on
optimism
goal.
Optimism is looking into the future and saying what Gio Reyna, not only what he is now, but what he's going to be for the next decade. Mm-hmm. Not only what Christian Pulisic is now, but what he's going to be for the next decade. That's optimism. That's looking into the future. And that's hoping that the United States can not only provide that with those players that I just mentioned, but then there are other players that will come from behind and also will develop. And then you put all that mix together. Hey, we got ourselves something special here. By the way, why am I making the case for the United States? I'm from Venezuela, for goodness sake. You're the American guy, and somehow you're the one with the negative vibe.
Yeah, I was in Cuba that night. night. You think we've lost Jan and Jules? You think they're still with us? Let's check in, guys. Dan, the Orange Man, with the next question. With Mo Salah testing positive for COVID and Liverpool's countless other injuries, do you see Leicester as favorites in their tie next weekend? Jan, you first. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I have to share the optimism. There's so much optimism now. It's very important in a dark time that we are optimistic.
Keep your optimism. Get me some shots on goal.
Come on, USA. Come on. Yes. Who should I be optimistic about? Leicester or Liverpool? I think that Liverpool still my favorite. Yes, they've been lucky with Van Dijk, Gomez, and no Salah. But I still think that culture, the way Liverpool is playing, the way Klopp is coaching his team is fantastic. They're still my favorite to win the Premier League. Having said that, Brendan Rodgers, underestimated coach, Vardy and so on and so on. It will be a great, great game. But still, I think that Liverpool will be the favorite to win that game as well.
Jules, it should be a great game. Who are you taking?
Yeah, it should be a great game. I mean, the good thing, if I can say that, for Liverpool is that Diogo Jota is in great form, and if nothing wrong happens to him between now and the game, he's a perfect replacement for Mo Salah, and you play a front three of Firmino, Mane and Jota, and that's a really strong front three as well. Okay, you need to sort out your defence, but at least you know you're going to score goals and create chances. But Leicester, like Jan said, have been so impressive. Wesley Fofana, who's one of my boys, have been incredible since he joined from Saint-Étienne. And I do think the form that Vardy is in, we saw Cengiz Under doing well with Turkey already in this international break. You know, all those pieces in the Leicester jigsaw are coming together at the right time, and it's no surprise at the top of the table as well in the Premier League. So it should be a fantastic game.
You catch that? One of my boys.
He's got a lot of boys, this guy. Yeah?
Jules, can we finally see a Messi-Griezmann partnership?
Jealous.
No jealousy here. I don't have many friends. But will we see a Messi-Griezmann partnership clicking this season? Finally, there have been moments where the duo have linked up really well with each other. The only thing that seems to be off right now is Griezmann's finishing. What do you think, Jules? Have they sorted it out?
I mean, again, we talked about optimism a lot so far. I'm the optimistic one here.
Optimism.
Griezmann,
optimism.
You know, but listen, I saw some positive signs in the Juve game where I thought they combined well. We saw positive signs in the Betis game where, again, they combined quite well. And, of course, Griezmann could be already on almost 10 goals this season in all competition if he'd scored all the big chances that have been created for him or that he created for himself. And I expect him to get more clinical now, you know, down the line through the season, the few weeks coming up. And but maybe I'm wrong, and maybe Jan and Ali, because they've been professional players, that they can help me understand. I think great players can always play together. I don't buy at all this, oh yeah, but those two, they can't play together. You know, if they want to, and yeah, of course, if they don't always move into the same areas, which is a problem that me and Ali have already highlighted on the show, but great players can always play together if they really want to, if they've got the right coach and the right setup around them as well. So I really want to believe that this one can work. They can work together.
Let's move on to the next question here. Ala, is Joao Felix proving his worth this season? If Atletico beat Barca, is Atletico winning La Liga? Two questions for the press of one.
Atletico Madrid right now, in my opinion, they have the inside track as the most consistent team in La Liga, have been so early on this year, and should be the favorites because of their performances, should be the favorites to win the league this year. Now, in order for that to happen, and this is how we tie the first question with the second one, Joao Felix must continue to play at the level that he's been playing. He was outstanding last weekend, and it's not only the goals, it's the vision, it's the passing, it's the movement, it's the confidence with which he's playing, and it's the freedom that he's being given by Simeone that wasn't always there. And so we see Joao Felix working defensively, but most of the time we see him getting the ball in a dangerous position, getting the ball in a place in which he can turn, he can go at somebody, he can find a pass, he can find a shot himself. And you see the full talent display. When he's confident and he's playing at this level, Atletico Madrid themselves are a different level. Mm.
All right, last question here, Jan. Tough one. Who's the best German manager in the world right now? Klopp, Hansi Flick, or Nagelsmann?
Klopp, number one. Hans Flick, number two. And Nagelsmann, number three. Klopp has done this for years. Hansi Flick has been the perfect manager for Bayern Munich. The only thing they dream of in Germany is that Bayern will get the wrong manager, and now they got the right manager, and they are unbeatable at the moment. Julian Nagelsmann came with a terrible suit to Old Trafford and lost 5-0. Had a bad image, but from the young guys coming up, and he's turning into an established one now. He will be there for many, many years. He's fantastic in training. The player praise him. People that work with him praise him. So he's the one for the future. And both Klopp and Nagelsmann one day end up being manager of Bayern Munich as well. So the three of them got something in common.
All right, gentlemen, great stuff. We will be back with plenty more on tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Speaking of bad suits, Dan Thomas is back.
Oh, hey, yeah.
FC available for you 7 days a week. Don't miss a single show.
He's an optimist.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at LectricEbikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.